Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, our next guest, senior features writer with The Telegraph, George Chesterton, went on a bold, sometimes bloody, often brambly quest to reconnect with his masculinity, or perhaps just his sense of self, through four primal activities: deer stalking, butchery, foraging, and axe throwing. Amid a feminised household, teenage daughters and midlife drift, he found himself longing for something more grounded, elemental and visceral than a round of golf or a city commute. So he got his hands dirty, literally, and discovered something deeper than manliness, presence, purpose and peace. George joins us now. George, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. This sounds like some journey you've been on, George.
As the token middle-aged man in the office and the token father of girls, I'm often asked to kind of think about these kind of issues. And it just occurred to me that, for my own personal self, that there was something perhaps missing. And the more I thought about it, that something missing was the kind of learning new experiences at my age. And as you mentioned, getting your hands dirty and kind of getting out of a routine, which for me it would be a kind of London suburbia routine, which is exactly that. It's a routine, and you can soon feel that you're stuck in something. And so I looked around for activities that were things that you would never do if you lived in suburban London.
Right.
And so we came up with these four, and they all had their own sort of distinct sort of elements, but they all gave me something that was, I guess, I was missing, and there was kind of it gave me something unique to think about and feel.
Right. They do seem to be more at the Rambo end of things you can get involved with.
Well, I guess I do look a bit like Vladimir Putin in some of the photographs, which is not really what I was looking for or aiming for. But right. Yeah,
that's really evil.
That was definitely not part of the plan.
Right,
but I guess, like I say, it needed to be some. I felt it needed to be something that was really, really different. And I'm 53. I've never held a gun or fired a gun, so. Not that I particularly had any craving to do that, but I thought that would be something really interesting and distinct to do. And in that particular case, I don't know if you have a similar experience in Ireland, but in England in particular is overrun with invasive deer species that need culling. And so it wasn't very hard to arrange to meet professional deer stalkers, because there's such a, you know, there's such a need for this activity to happen. So that was all very straightforward. And it was a completely new thing. I had to learn how to hold a gun, how to use it, how to be safe with it. And then we had to go out into the woods, and I had to kind of do the thing that, you know, I've never done before. And that in itself was interesting. And some people were very sort of surprised when I said, I'm going to shoot a deer, or I told them that my mother was very angry with me, for example.
Your daughters weren't put them asleep with stories of Bambi, and you're now heading into the woods to kill Bambi.
Yeah, well, one of them was a bit like that for a while, but then she gave up, because as I kind of allude to in the article, you know, when you've got teenage daughters, they tend not to talk to you very much anyway. They kind of showed a slight interest initially, and then they just lost interest completely, which is kind of part of this kind of world that I inhabit with, as I say, with that kind of that world of being surrounded by women who, you know, and I had an opportunity to do something, and that seemed like a really good one to take.
So what was that like? Because you said you'd never fired a gun before, had you not?
No, not at all.
I've also never fired a gun, and I think I'm very glad about that fact, because when you look around the world at the moment, you're thinking there's enough guns being fired, right? So for me to do that, I'd need to cross that barrier in my mind first. All right. And
yeah,
then,
sure. I mean,
then you have facing a living, you know, animal.
Well, I thought about that, and I thought to myself, well, if I was a vegetarian or a vegan, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Because that would be contradictory. But since I'm not, and since, as I say, there is a, as I explain, it's a fact that there are invasive species of deer in England in particular, which destroy the local environments and the ecosystems.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be there. And I thought, well, if I meet, it's a bit like with butchery, the same thing. If I eat meat, I don't see why I should have a kind of philosophical problem with this. And you know, some might say, well, how can you kill another living creature? But I think if you're eating living creatures, killing them in a sustained way, in where they're, you know, they're literally, what's the word? They're kind of as wild as they can be, and they're not free range, as it were.
Yeah.
Then I didn't want to feel hypocritical about it.
Yeah.
I was kind of at ease with that, and it was as you, without wishing to sound completely callous, it was a very quick death. And the guide who was with me quickly, you know, hung the deer up and effectively kind of butchered it on the spot, and then took it to a farmer's market to sell. So it went back into the kind of the food chain, as it were.
Right.
And it was not something that gave me too much of a problem. Maybe that says something terrible about me.
I'm just thinking about that myself now. I'm reappraising my view of you as we go. I do see myself just on that moment where 1 minute you're looking down the barrel at a living thing walking around, and the next, you know, you're not. Was that? Did you feel that was a big moment, or how did you feel during that?
Well, no, because as I say, if you know that these stalkers are out culling these deer on the behest of farmers who effectively are destroying the local habitat, and they don't kill. They tend not to kill indigenous deer very much. It's mainly these invasive species, which are originally from Southeast Asia and India. And they were basically pets in people's grand houses, and they all escaped and started breeding. And as I say, the alternative was not to do it. So not to do it means not having the experience. So I thought it was worth having the experience despite, you know, any reservations I might have had. And as I say, I completely understand if someone had been a vegetarian or a vegan, they would have been disgusted by that. But it just seemed like a hypocritical thing for me to turn my nose up at.
Right. And once it was done, how did you feel once it was done? Was there any initial kind of feeling of a done that achievement? Or
no, again, I don't want to sound like a psychopath, but it was just, it felt like it was part of the, it was just part of the natural process. And you know, as I say, these stalkers are out every day doing this, and
sure.
it was just treated as a very matter of fact thing, and I ultimately felt that way about it in the end.
Did you?
But I don't have any plans to do it again.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Did you get involved in the butchery yourself?
No, you have to have a license to do that.
Okay.
So that wasn't, I just observed that from you know, from a safe distance.
But you did do the foraging, and you kind of, you really enjoyed that, didn't you?
Yes, I did. No animals were harmed in that exercise whatsoever. It was, the reason I found that so sort of invigorating was because more than anything, that gave me a sense of a kind of lost connection with the environment, because they were so informative and so interesting to be told there's such a wide range of plants that an expert can explain what's edible, what's not edible, what has medicinal purposes, what can be used in one way or another. A thought occurred to me, and the feeling occurred to me that this is something that almost everyone has lost. I'm sure it's true in your part of the world as well, where, you know, maybe people who grew up in the 40s and 50s would have had an intrinsic knowledge of their environment in a much more profound way than we do now. And it sort of struck me that, you know, all these old-fashioned names for herbs and what you might call a weed, but they're actually completely edible and they have lots of good uses. And it was really sort of stimulating and kind of enlivening, and made me feel very positive to find out about these plants and about what they could do, because there's just, you know, people walk through, they might go hiking, they might go to their local park. All these things are all there.
Yeah.
But unless you know where to look or what to see and how to find these things, then you would never know anything about them.
No, you wouldn't. We're incredibly insulated from the reality of how food arrives on our plates. I saw a program about Settling America last night. They were talking about discovering what was you could eat by a process of trial and error, which sounds like a great plan, doesn't it?
The one thing I would say was I was actually shocked about how dangerous very, very, very common plants are in the countryside. And that was, I did not know there were so many potentially lethal plants to humans anyway, just kind of lying around. So it's all useful information ultimately.
So when you had done all this, did you feel any different? Did you feel any more masculine? Did you feel different about your masculinity?
Well, the masculinity thing is an interesting one because I guess there's a distinction between being macho, which I certainly didn't feel, and feeling invigorated in a kind of positive way. And I guess that is tied to masculinity because, part of the motivation for doing this was the sense of getting to that age, that mid-50s, early 50s age, and feeling that, you know, perhaps you're not really pursuing those activities, those physical activities, or those new experiences and new skills that you can learn, they're passing you by. And a lot of that is just pure routine, pure kind of tiredness from work, pure sort of obligations that you have and things you have to do, which are all important. I'm not saying, of course, they are, but I think the openness that you might feel to new experiences is often something that dissipates as you get older. And I think for men, especially when they are primarily concerned with just doing their job, helping their family, doing what they have to do, it's like having a real sort of fresh experience that's really invigorating. And one of the things that I noted, that the most successful article I've ever written, probably in my whole life, terms of pure, not this one, but in terms of pure attention and eyeballs, was an article I wrote about middle-aged men not seeing their friends. And I think that's slightly connected to this, in that I think, again, when men get to a certain age, their friendship groups start to diminish, and they see their friends less often, with bigger gaps, and there's fewer of them. I think women are much better at keeping their friend networks and support groups strong and regular. And I think that it's much more common for men to kind of let that go, which means they fall out of touch with all sorts of things. And this was, quite a sort of dramatic kind of version of that. But it was the same principle, which is that I think it was too easy to be stuck. And it was time to try some new things.
Right. Are you going to do more new things, or was this a one-off experiment?
As I make a joke about at the end of the article, what I really would like to do is get into some water with some sharks and do that kind of thing. So that's when I'm hankering for some diving, some scuba diving perhaps, and then hanging around with some potentially dangerous animals, but I won't be killing any of those. I can promise you that.
You seem to have a taste for it now, George. There's no question.
No, absolutely not. No, that is not. I don't want to be categorised as some kind of animal hunter.
I meant more a taste for the adventure.
But I think I have a sort of sneaky feeling that diving is kind of very good for you. So that's the next thing I'd like to try out, I think.
All right, brilliant. George, we await your writing on such adventures. Brilliant. George, thanks very much for joining us today. George Chesterton there, senior features writer with The Telegraph.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.